more certain again.
No, it's just so that we get a sense of what
it was in the previous day, and it's another marine.
Okay. Okay, we'll have to look into that, Mr. Gaylor, and get that article and get the content and the background to that, and of course, accordingly program it. So, members, we have those 3.5 areas of our program. Welcome everybody, also from the industry, the fishermen and women, media, interested parties, and we have two apologies for today. Mr. Stain, who cannot be with us today, and also Mr. Banga, who had indicated that he's coming late. Let's not take much of the time and move straight to... Oh, sorry, Mama. Okay. Mama Nyalungu is attending Skopa. Mama Paliso. Mama Paliso will leave at 1. We don't intend to be that long. I'm sure by the time it is 1 o'clock, we shall have concluded our session. Those are the only apologies that we have that are going to be recorded. Members, we have the department before us, both on the area related to the Gazette, transfer of some functions. We agree that we need the department to brief us on that. And also the briefing on the vessel in the state of readiness to sail, both on the protection and also on the research. Okay. We shall then give over to the department. I take it that you are leaving us, Mr. Manya.
Chair, thank you. Good morning to the honorable members. I'm standing in for the acting director general who's on leave at the moment, but Mr. Desmond Stevens is going to lead our presentation from the fishery component. He's the deputy acting deputy director general for fishery. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here. Chairperson, as we have been requested, we will clarify the issue around the functions and powers of the department pertaining to a proclamation signed by the President on the 31st of May. Now, I just want to give a little bit of a background because I think there is some misunderstanding about what this proclamation entails. With the start of the mandate of this current government in 2009, there was a reconfiguration of departments, and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fishery was formed, and this department was made up of functions or branches from previously separated departments. Now, the formation of the and the transfer particularly of fisheries from the Department of Environmental Affairs was authorized by two proclamations. It's Proclamation 44 on the 1st of July 2009, where the functions of aquaculture were transferred to the new Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. A few months later, through a process of intensive negotiations between DEF and DEA, a second proclamation was announced where the transfer of the captured fisheries was then authorized through a proclamation from what we call the old MCM in DEA. Those functions was transferred to Department of Agriculture and Forestry and Fisheries. The effect of these proclamations was to separate the mandate for fisheries management and marine environmental management, which both of those resided in one act, namely the Marine Living Resources Act, which is also subject now of review. Furthermore, just to pause a little bit there, this new department was then has had all of these functions of fisheries was then transferred from DEA to DEF. I think we must be clear in our minds. Everything to do with fisheries was now managed by the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in the department. Following Cabinet's approval of the small-scale fishery policy, there was a suggestion, because in the policy we talked about the declaration of fishing management areas, that the activities in the marine protected areas, which is in Section 43 of the MLRA, that the Minister of DEF to be allowed to declare these areas fishing management areas. Now the whole process went through extensive negotiations between the DEA, DEF and the Presidency, and a draft proclamation was prepared, and from advice from the Presidency it was submitted to the Chief State Law Advisor for a legal opinion. The legal opinion is I've copied it in page 4. And I don't want to maybe it's very self-explanatory. So in the light of this legal opinion that says that the transfer of Section 43 of the MLRA from DEA to DEF would be unconstitutional, as it would diminish the ability of the Minister of DEA to give effect to Section 24 of the Constitution, which is quoted there. Now, in the light of this legal opinion, on the 24th of October 2012, the Minister of DEF, our Minister, approved the recommendation that the Department should not proceed with the transfer of Section 43 of the MLRA and that a revised proclamation be concluded by the Presidency. This proclamation is structured in such a way, this new one, that it clarifies the two previous proclamations, Proclamation 44 and Proclamation number 1 of February 2010. And it outlines for each section of the MRA the cabinet minister previously responsible from whom the section is being transferred and the extent of the function that is being transferred to the receiving cabinet minister. I think that proclamation was well publicized. But it should be noted, and I think this is where we want to clarify maybe the reporting that was not correct, that no functions that were performed by the fisheries branch or all of the functions, no functions of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries pertaining to fisheries from DEA to DEF in April will be affected by this transfer of functions contained in the proclamation of 31st of May 2013. So it's not correct that there was any changes or any powers or functions taken away from the Minister of Deaf, which pertains to fisheries. We still have all of the fishery functions with us. It is only the clarification of Section 43 of the MRA, and no additional powers and functions will be transferred to DIA. So this Section 43.6 must be read together with the regulations for each MPA. Each of the MPAs that is declared have a set of regulations. So the Minister of Deaf retains the powers and functions related to fisheries management in those MPAs where fishing is allowed, including the permitting, fishing rights allocation, fisheries-related research, and enforcing the regulations with regard to the types of fishing specified therein. We have listed a number of those examples of those MPAs where fishing is allowed and where our minister and department retains fishery-related powers and functions. And the list is there. So I hope that little bit of clarify this issue. Just want to add, finally, there's an existing MOU between fisheries or the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and the Department of Environmental Affairs. Our fisheries branch and their oceans and coast branch this existing MOU that are there will be amended to reflect special requests to DEF regarding the enforcement in certain MPAs, which they will, if these requests are made to us, the Department of Environmental Affairs will consider those requests and they will reimburse us for assisting them with our protection vessels. So thank you, Chair, that I hope that have clarified this matter about the proclamation of the 31st of May, which was signed by the President.
Straightforward briefing. Members, if there any question, comment on the issues? Mr. Vandana?
Yes, I just would like to know, with the transfer of these, or with the redefining of the boundaries between D and DEF, can you assure us that the quotas that have been granted in the Eastern Cape does not fall under this? Does that mean that process was still legal, or is it open to a challenge in court because of the, and that all the decisions that was taken before from the side of DEF was legal and that they will still be binding and not be open to challenges in court? Thank you.
If you for the benefit of the rest, if you were also to be specific when you ask a question, Mr. van der Leyen, quotas in the Eastern Cape you are talking. Yeah, but you need to be specific. What is it that you're referring to?
Yes, last year some quotas were allocated to some fishermen in a marine protected area, and it was said that it was a pilot project to see if there was enough perlemoon, and there was a big outcry by the community that they should not be taking out perlemoon in the area and it should be protected, but these quotas were appointed to some people and outside contractors came in to extract the perlemoon, and there was an outcry about it, and then I would like to know if that is now open to a challenge in court.
That assists.
Does it help?
That assists.
Oh, thank you.
So that we are clear of what we are talking about. Quotas in the Eastern Cape. What about quotas in the Eastern Cape? You have explained. Thank you for that. Any further questions, comments?
Yeah, bonus. sikele ukukhanyiselela jepha sikhona lapho engezwanga khona njengalokhu amandla ebuyela laba-DEA environment ngabe kulokhu kusho ukuthi ukubhekela amanzi olwandle nokuvikela kokuphosha ngabe sezoba umsebenzi wabo noma kuzoqhubeka ku-agriculture ngixolele ukuthi ngibuza kanje ngoba bengazoqala ngaphi jepha
uzwile Mustafa uSteven. Poaching and also patrol still within DAF or over to DIA. Is there any other question, comment? Okay, very last one.
Yes, at our last meeting it was said, and it was also reported in the newspaper, that we would, or this committee had asked, or members of this committee had asked that the that the seals harvest and slaughter should be started again. But that now does not fall in our committee, so we can't make a... that now falls under DIA if I have it right. It doesn't fall in the mandate of this committee. And I just want to say that not everybody in the committee feels the same way about that request that was made. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think we should have a briefing by or have a joint session with the environment on that one. Something that we may wish to have it is programmed. Well, it's a matter that is of importance and that we're keen on. I think that's been said several times, I think by Mrs. Paliso, I can't remember by who else. Mama Paliso?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairperson. I would propose, Chairperson, we had a joint portfolio committee with DIA because it's just not a matter to be left hanging. We need to engage on the matter. Fact of the matter is food security is under threat. Thanks, Chair.
Let's take those few.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think some of them were comments. It's not in the ambit of ourselves to respond. But I want to clarify this matter about there's no quotas that has been given in the Eastern Cape. It's an experimental fishery of abalone. It's about 1,500 beneficiaries. It's about, if my memory serves me correct, about 7 to 8 areas in Eastern Cape. Working with our scientists to do an experiment on that the availability of the abalone resource for commercial harvesting, the possibility for it. It's a similar experiment in Volksburg, which this experiment is over 3 years, and we are working closely with the communities, with our researchers around establishing the issue about if there's a possibility for a commercial fishery in Eastern Cape of abalone. Now, so that must be clarified. It's not a quota that was given to people. Secondly, for both questions, the issue about the functions, and I want to emphasize, no functions of fisheries has been transferred to DIA. None of this can be challenged because those proclamations that was declared in 2009, 2010 has been confirmed. The proclamation of 31st of May is just aligning those functions and restating them again in a consolidated proclamation of 31st of May. So in our view, the issue about poaching, the issues about patrolling our coast, all all of those functions remains the functions of DEF. Of course, we work in collaboration with other government departments because the poaching issue cannot only be handled with one department. We have an integrated security strategy which we deal with all law enforcement agencies. We are in our MOU that we have signed with DEA, which is now being amended due to this proclamation, is basically we have a service level agreement where we will assist DEA in Marion Island, Edward Islands, around if the needs be for using our protection vessels. But the message that must go out, Chairperson, I think there must be no confusion that the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is the executive authority on everything that deals with fisheries in the country. There's no confusion around that. With us, with the proclamations that were signed by the President, that we are in charge of fisheries in the country under the leadership of Minister Tina Chumat-Peterson. Yeah, Dr. Augustine just reminded me that includes fishing that takes place in the MPAs, which are Section 43. Ourselves, we can request for the declaration of an MPA if there's a spawning area that we think is required, but also we work with DEA when there's requests around using certain MPAs for fisheries. But it's part of a broader strategy around sustainability and conservation of our fisheries resources.
And it's clear? Follow?
Chairperson, the experiment of abalone in Eastern Cape, can we be given a document on that? Where are those sites? I think the committee needs to know where are the experiment sites. Thank you.
Just to clear up a matter, Mr. Stevens has now said that everything to do with fisheries is the ministry is the sole executive authority. So maybe you can just explain to us why DTI is doing the handing over of the fishing boats and the boats to the fishing communities. Why is DTI then so deeply involved in that part? Thank you.
And perhaps maybe on that note, it might just be prudent on us that you are talking about boats. We have a briefing session that talks about boats. And then we have comprehensive responses on boats. Mr. Gallery, your point is a straightforward one. It takes information. Unless you want that information mentioned.
You are right, it's straightforward, but you know, Chairperson, we've said this over and over again in this committee. We must be given the facts. Yesterday I was in the Eastern Cape, in Dwese area. The committee has got a problem with the DTA, and also a problem with the park sport. The local people that are down there. So we need to be, you know, give us the true information. That's what we want. And we just don't get that. For four years we've just been playing around and been doing this and that. Down there, what they are saying does not happen. Thank you.
Will you do as requested? What are those zones?
Thank you, Chair. We have a very detailed document that describes the whole experiment. We can make the document available with the list of the beneficiaries, the areas where the experiment is taking place. We can make that document available to the committee.
I guess the point raised by Mr. Gela is that document is going to be available. It is ready.
It is ready. It's,
there is nothing criminal about that.
No, it's not. So the hidden document has been discussed.
The point raised by Mr. Gayla is that if you could just what are those zones? Zone 1, zone 2, zone 3 is in this area and so on and so forth. Covering this area and so on and so forth.
We'll provide a document which describes all of those areas. I can't remember all of them offhand now. Yes.
Is that fine, Mr. Gayla? Okay.
Honorable Chairperson, can I respond to Honorable Van Dalen's issue about the... I think we must not...
Okay, can we have one briefing on the vessels? Then we have one comprehensive response on vessels. Thank you. Members, I tell you that we are now going to go through the vessel briefing, and then we have one session that responds to all the issues related to vessels. Okay?
That is not the same vessels that I'm talking about.
I'm very much conscious about that.
Those are DCI boats.
I'm very much aware.
I think there's a difference between vessels and boats.
Thank you, sir. English is my seventh language. Mr. Manya, Mr. Stevens?
Colleague, you're just finding the presentation. Yeah. Chairperson, as an introductory note, as we have reported before in the committee, before I go to the each and every status of each and every vessel, just an introductory note is that we have reported to the portfolio committee before that we have a contract and the vessel has been transferred to DEF now. It's in our possession. We are repairing these vessels. We have two service providers that the original builders of these vessels are in the process of repairing the different defects of the vessels. And that is a six-month contract that we have with these vessels. Now I'm going to go through one by one and also explain to the status of each of the vessels. And we'll talk later about the sea readiness of each of them. The Sara Bartman, which is a fishery protection vessel, when this vessel was with the Navy. They unfortunately removed certain of the valves and put valves of the which are specifications of military on it, and we are in the process of removing those valves to replace it with the original valves. This vessel, by the end of June, will be dry docked. Outstanding, in the next 2 weeks we have hoped to complete that also. It's also a fishery protection vessel, Victorian Penguin, similar to Route First. She have done passed the launch classification survey. The SAMHSA status survey is still outstanding. Lilian and Goy, the engine service has been outstanding, and we've been working with the Navy around it. They have started with this engine service in January this year. We hope to also be able to dry dock this vessel by the end of June. Florence Mukhize, this is one of those fast chase boats which is basically all of the work has been done on her, and she's been working we're also still busy just to finalize the with the Florence Mukhize. We'll talk about the Red Sea readiness later. The Ellen Kuzwayo, she's been will take approximately 4 weeks to be ready for sea. The Lloyd survey has been completed, interim certificate is issued, and some pre-registration and statutory service is outstanding. We've also registered on the South African SIPS register. Yeah, that is one of the research vessels, Ellen Kuzwayo. The other one, the oldest one, is the Africana. There's 12 conditional class items still outstanding. She also needs a dry docking to repair the bow thruster seal. We have requested the Navy to use their dry dock and are awaiting a response from them. Yesterday, in principle, they've agreed to assist the use of the dry dock at a certain cost. That is the status of these vessels. But just in addition, information to the committee. With the 6-month contract, we simultaneously have embarked on the process of the tender, the new tender process. We have employed a vessel management expert that have assisted us around developing the specs. We've advertised this tender last week on Friday, and we will this week advertise it in 2 international magazines. The submission date for this tender is the 2nd of August. Prospective tenderers will also be able to view the vessels and see their status closer to the end of the month, and we will have a briefing session for bidders on the 28th of June, and we hope to conclude the adjudication August, September with the appointment of a new management agency that will assist us in managing these vessels. Thank you very much, Chair.
Another simple and straightforward one. Question? Comments? Mr. Abra? Noted, Mr.
I don't know from which book Mr. Stevens was reading about. What I have here in front of me.
You can start singing from the mic.
Chairperson, you see, we've heard so many times that something is ready 50% and something is ready 75%. We hear it all too often. And I'm afraid, Chair, what I see in front of me doesn't give me much confidence. What does it mean when you say that a particular vessel is 95% ready for sea? Now, what is the 5% that doesn't make it ready. How long is that 5% going to take to make it seaworthy? Or that it would then go out to sea? You see, Chairperson, the problem is that when a Department of State puts something down in black and white, it must be something that actually creates confidence. There must be integrity in any statement that is made. So that a week or two or three down the line, we can go back to what was said and measure it up against what is happening. And that is a problem, Chairperson. Because here we're creating an expectation. We are saying here, Chairperson, for example, the route first, 95% ready for sea. It will take approximately 1 week to ready her for sea. SEMSA statutory surveys and hull survey required. Lloyd's survey has been completed and an interim certificate issued. Now, Chairperson, when you say it will be ready in 1 week to go to sea, to me, this document was delivered in my pigeonhole on Friday last week, which was on the 7th. So what you are saying is that on the 14th, this vessel will be ready to go out to sea. Now, Brastav, is that going to happen?
Let's ask the department, is that going to happen?
Chairperson, you know, in my presentation, and it's unfortunate that some of these, because of experience with the committee, we want Honorable Member Abram to be truthful to you. It's like I've explained in a meeting in our office, it's like my car is ready. That route first is ready. The repairs has been done. But we need to have the driver's license, which is not issued by us. If I can make an example like this. That vessel must be transferred from being classified as a military vessel to the Merchant Shipping Act. It must be gazetted. Then SEMSA, who is giving the driver's license, must give us their driver's license. So, if I want to make it a simple explanation as that. So your question about the 14th of June, we don't want to say, because you also don't want to be forced to say a specific date, and then the people that must give us that survey, that classification, are not able to meet a specific date. So the route first in Victoria and Kenge is basically, they are repaired, but they are not seaworthy to go to the sea because we don't have that classification.
In other words, before we... Ms. Abram, you're still on the floor. Can I have 1 minute? Thank you very much.
Want to thank Mr. Stevens.
In other words, what you are saying, from where you are seated, with what's the company's name again? Not you? Diamonds. The repairs have been done. Is that what you're saying? In other words, there are other agencies that must certify that this car must go now with a license or whatever it takes.
For those two specific vessels, Victorian Kenge and Rufus.
Okay. Mr. Ra?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank Mr. Stevens for having cleared up the issue. But you see, if I did not ask, and I would have left here, and all of us would have left here with the impression, by Jove, next week, 14th, this vessel is going to be out at sea. Now, you see, Chairperson, all I'm asking for is that we must see that the sort of information that we make available is of such a nature that when anybody from outside sees this, that person must get the impression that the department is giving me a true reflection. As to the ordinary person, Chair, when the ordinary person is not concerned or does not know about the fact that there must be a roadworthy or a seaworthy certificate issued or that sort of thing, the ordinary person reads here that it will take approximately 1 week to ready her for sea. Now, Chairperson, all I'm asking is that if we impart information, let us impart information that the ordinary person, especially an ignorant person like me who knows very little about boats and vessels and ships, knows exactly what is meant here. Otherwise, Chairperson, you're creating expectations, Chair. And if you don't satisfy those expectations, you rather not tell people anything than to tell people something, and that something does not take place. Now, Chairperson, does this now mean that when we say, for example, you take Sarah Bartman, this document here tells me that it's 50% ready for sea. Her underwater valves were removed and military spec valves were ordered. She will have to be dry docked in the first week of June, as delivery of military spec valves are delayed. You see, they are delayed. Estimated time ready for sea, end of June 2013. Now, I want to tell the department here, with all the love at my disposal, you know when is the end of June, Chair? In 19 days' time. And I promise you, Chair, forget the seaworthiness. This vessel will not be ready by that date. Now, I have one final question, Chair, which bothers me. And I'm sure it bothers others too. At the moment, Chair, as we are sitting here, are our coastal waters being patrolled? Is there any watch on our coastal waters? Is there any activity? I think our rights are, 200 kilometers into the sea. Or nautical miles, whatever they call it. Is that area at the moment, Chair, not subject to any form of poaching? I would like to know that, Chair. Because I'm basing this now, Chair, on the fact that the information disseminated here does not give me confidence. So I would like to know if those waters are being patrolled, whether we are not being fished out of existence. And when our people eventually get rights to fish there, there would be very little left to take out, Chair. Because foreign vessels, I understand that there's foreign vessel activity. I would like to know whether what I've heard is correct or not, Chair. Thank you.
Perhaps the document should also have said, when it was written, subject to licensing by whoever, subject to whatever else that does not reside in your domain. Anyone who reads the document, Mr. Brahm is saying, has a fuller clarity of what that document shall have meant when it said, it is ready. I mean, the vessel is ready, a vessel A or vessel B, and so on. Mr. Pandala?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. You know, I wanted to also ask something about the first question, and it's that, you know, Mr. Stevens, he says Mr. Abrams must be truthful. And he said it as if Mr. Abrams was privy to some information that I was not privy in. Maybe that came up in these secret meetings you have with the department that we are not allowed to have. You know that, and then Mr. Stevens talked about licensing
Mr.
of the...
Stevens was...
Chairperson, I just need to correct something.
Set us on the truthfulness part of it.
The issue of truthfulness.
Okay. I think what Mr. Stevens said and what I understood is that they want to be truthful in giving us the correct information.
Thank you, sir.
He did not accuse me of being...
Thank you, sir.
At my age, sir, I can't afford to tell a lie.
Thank you, sir. You understand exactly now what Mr. Stevens was saying.
But
you understand exactly. You do understand now. Thank you, sir.
Well, then I get to my second part of the question, which would be that, you know, if you are if you need a license, you need a competent driver as well to license, you know, and it can take a long time to train somebody to be a competent vessel driver. And if you don't have it, then, you know, maybe it would be a good thing if Mr. Stevens could give us the assurance that these ships would go out by the day, and if he doesn't, then he will resign. You know, he'll make sure that they go out. Put everything in place. Because these days we have been misled by this portfolio committee so many times before that we have had so many. So I think, you know, that when, just before they come to the committee, they suck these bags out of their thumb, you know. So maybe we can get some assurance, and it would be quite nice if Mr. Stevens would say he would resign, you know, if they don't agree to that. Then, can you inform us how far the investigation into the alleged corrupt awarding of the vessel tender with Smith Amandla and subsequently to Sekondyalo? Would it not be prudent to wait? I say this on the back that you have advertised this contract again. Would it not be prudent to wait until there was an outcome before going out to tender? As this will open the awarding of the new tender, should it be approved? Should it be proved that the minister was on a wild goose chase in alleging that Smith Amandla was guilty of corruption, and then it's found that they were not corrupt, you know, and that they were falsely and wrongly accused? This would open this whole tender up to a legal battle, because Smith Amandla would definitely argue that they would also be able to allow the tender. And then you also say that the tender has internationally been advertised in some international papers. Now that would fly in the face of what the minister has said when she announced that Sekondyalo had won the tender and that it was the BEE company of Mr. Iqbal Survey, because it was going to support jobs for local black people. And now you are again going to advertise it internationally, and I just would want to know, you know, what you accuse one international company of being too white, and then another one you are advertising on the outside internationally again. I would just think that is a double talk. You know, if you are going to try and empower black people in South Africa, you would only advertise it in South Africa. You would not advertise it overseas. Because there are no... Yeah, tomorrow, let me not go there. You also inform us that the interim tender was awarded to a company, Nordic Africa.
I just trust you're not going to say there are no black professionals.
No,
in Western Cape. You're not saying that.
No, I wasn't going to.
Because those black
professionals. You are putting words in my mouth, Chairman. So, and you also informed us that the interim tender was awarded to the company, Nordic Africa. And that was previously known as K&D, and I have the evidence to prove that and to back it up. And K&D was the company that was involved with the Sekondyalo tender. This was in the consortium. They said in court documents that K&D was going to supply the services for Sekondyalo. And then Ms. Appelgren at the press conference had said that no company that was involved in the previous attempted corrupt awarding of the vessel tender would be eligible to do any work or to apply for any interim contract. And yet you have now given it to a company that was involved. So that doesn't bode well to the promises that you have given and assurances you have given us about this. So I would just like to know your explanation on this. And it's no good saying the company changed its name, it was not involved. I have evidence that it was. It's on their website, it says, Nordic Africa, previously known as KND, and KND was the company that was involved in this corrupt award, of alleged corrupt awarding or attempted corrupt award. But I need some explanation to that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Taylor?
You know, Chairperson, Kunzi, I hope you can translate it. Kunzi, not me. Mr. Stevens, as a leader of the Marines, I'm not happy with what you're giving us here. If I was a leader, this is what I would have done. First of all, you should know when the vessel would be ready. Secondly, you should know what time it would take to transfer from military to the merchant. And so I'm getting to check with you. Also, you should know when would the classification be ready, because those are government department or entities. Yeah, you're giving us information that is, it's worthless. It just shows there is a problem with your leadership style. It is very clear. You should have given us the right information at the acting teacher. We are tired of piecemeal information that we're getting from this department. Chairperson, I will request that they give us another document with proper information. We're entitled to information. Let us be very clear. We're talking about public monies, and these are public servants, and we are representing public. We want the proper information. So through you, I request that we be given the proper information. When will these vessels be ready? It's a long time that we're getting this piecemeal information. You can go back, it's always in 2 weeks, in 1 week. It's been going on for some years now. So let us get the proper, we're entitled to proper information so that we can report to the people we represent. We are representing people here. We want to get the proper information and we're entitled to it. We are demanding it. Then the tender. I hope this time around your tender has got a clause for skills transfer. I repeat again, I hope this time around there's that clause. Secondly, I hope it also has a clause for maintenance of these vessels. Because that's why we're in the mess up now, is that these vehicles were not properly maintained. Hope this time around, at least that is in your tender document specification. Then, lastly, according to this document here, you appointed interim service provider. What is the cost of this? And what is this interim service provider supposed to do? And to date, whether if you, I'm sorry, you don't have the information now. I'm very clear about that. And to date, what has been paid to SA Navy? What cost are we talking about that the public has to pay, the public purse? And so we need to know that, Jefferson. And we have a right to, we must be very clear, we have a right to know that. What is the cost of the interim service provider and what is the cost to date that has been paid to the Navy by the department or the monies of the taxpayers? Thank you.
Mama? No, no, sir, Mama, first.
The Chairperson, thank you, and good morning to everybody. Chairperson, what do we want to see as this committee and the people who are there waiting? only want to see this vessel in the water. And Sarah Bartman, the problem there, they are saying is only valve. I don't think maybe this valve, or we get it overseas, or we get it in South Africa. I don't think the valve is very, 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 very far. And I it won't take long to get this valve. And on what we want to see, Chairperson, as this committee, is to see this vessel doing their job in the water, especially these ones which are ready, but waiting for the license. And we should know that if the license is not from the Department of DAF, it's from other sections. It's just like if you have a firearm, you can't, even if this firearm is not broken, you can't have certain a ready. But if you don't have license, you can't. You must have a license first. Including cars and anything which needs license. And in my mind, I just pray that these people who should issue the license should give them the license, yeah, so that this vessel should do their job. I think that is all what this committee wants, to see this vessel right deep in the water doing their monitoring, their job. Yeah, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by Umabo Bilus, because to me it's also about job creation in South Africa, according to the making of these vessels. I'm aware that Africana is a very old vessel, very, very, very old infrastructure that we inherited from apartheid. So, Chair, I don't need your comment, Mr. Vandala. Please respect me. You are rude. Chairperson, mine is, we need to have those warehouses in the country for us to be able not to be delayed, because the research is for us for the right allocation, very important. We need to know which species do we have where, in which zones. And for that matter, Chair, as a very simple thing, not rocket science, it's for us really to have the research information, and not information that we are going to be fed from your doom prophets, but from the real research conducted by the department and the experts that work with the day-to-day of doing just that. Chair, to me also, I don't think you will be able, the department will be able, not speaking for the department, to give us an exact, they can give us an estimate time frame. Estimate, but an exact date will be just a recipe for disaster. If you are going to wait for some other institution to give you a certificate, Let us talk about reality here and not talking as if we are talking of a movie story. That's reality, Chaps. So, I would propose, Chair, I don't know did I miss such a portfolio committee meeting. A joint meeting, again, I ask, with DTI that is allocating vessels, but I also need to know from the department, do we have information that locally there is a firm that makes vessels? Because to my knowledge, we do have indigenous people, black people, who are never acknowledged, who can make those vessels. I have in my community, because we are talking of skills and capacity, we have natural capacity in this country. That was never since apartheid acknowledged in this country. And we can't not acknowledge it in our own democracy while we are governing. So I do need that information as a portfolio committee member. And I'm aware and we can identify those artisans. We do have. That's the reality. We must speak about facts. Things that affect food security, food on the table for poorest of the poor. I'm poor, that's why I like the poor word. I will never be rich, I'll die poor. Chairperson, let me just pause there because there were many questions. I'll have a follow-up after the response. I thank you, Chair.
Mr. Gill, I was trying to imagine here Mr. Stevens is a captain of this boat. As a driver of this boat, he has to know for sure by this date he pronounces this shall happen. And I'm asking myself a question. I hear people talking all the time. You know, others they say, by 2019, you know, this blue party shall rule this country. And you hear such, you know, movie stories, you know, being told. Mr. Kip, noted, Mr. Abram. Mr. Gaylor? No, said Mr. Abram.
Oh, sorry.
No. What I wanted to say, let us not try, gain some points here. I'm talking to the manager, the man who runs the ships. Not like I've been a manager before. Talking from experience. If you know you're getting your belt from overseas, as a manager, talk about a manager, get your quotation, when can I get the belt? Then they'll give you a quotation and say, we'll deliver, whether it's in a year's time, Mr. Seaver, they will deliver in a year's time. Take that information, keep it. When can, there's an estimate, you cannot say licensing for the whole 5 years. It makes me take 3 weeks, then you buy yourself and add another week or 2 weeks. Then you come up with, we need, as a manager, Stephen knows what I'm talking about. We don't want an estimate, we're tired of estimates, we want to know, not now, but it's got to come up with a date, by such a date, this, whether it's 20, but by that date, these vessels will be the same. That's what we want. And I'm not making a mistake, I don't want anybody to dilute whatever. I'm talking that man who is the manager of the ship. Thank you.
Mr. Abram, and then we'll give over to the department.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, since we are talking about all these contracts and stuff, now, Chairperson, there was a contract signed with Damon Shipyards for repairs and maintenance of the fleet on the 3rd of April. And it is said here further that this contract was for a period of about 6 months, and there was a parallel process regarding the tender process that would continue. Now the question here is, Chair, where is that parallel process at the moment as we speak here? How far is it? Then, Chairperson, regarding the two contracts that were signed with Damien and Nautic South Africa, what was the value of that contract? Now, if those contracts were signed around about April 2013, then it's less than 2 months ago, and the progress that you had reported, is that as a result of them having signed this contract on the 24th of April, or is it something that had started before that? And then, Chairperson, the other question here is that the department had promised some time ago to start a process of getting the Afrikaner replaced. Can the officials here tell us how far is that process at the moment? And finally, sir, it is said here that a vessel technical advisor or vessel expert has been contracted to assist with the specifications and provide the necessary server advice on the way forward with the process. And this process is underway. Now, is this now with regard to the interim process, where the tender process will continue? We're talking of so many processes here. And one gets a bit mixed up about which one we are actually referring to. So, Chairperson, one would like to know, where are all these things at the moment? Because I can promise you, from what we have seen happening in the department since last year, we went out to the South African Navy, I think last year in November. At that time already, Chair, there were certain, I wouldn't call them commitments, but they were very close to commitments that were made. And we are now 7 months hence. And in these 7 months, Chair, all we have is what I have read out here. So it's very worrisome, Chair, that we do not seem to take these issues very seriously. You see, Chair, the department, when you are the person that pays, Chair, he that pays the piper must call the tune. I mean, if I want, if I was a private boat owner, and I have contracted somebody to do repairs to my boat, now I must pay hard-earned cash to that repairer. Chairperson, I promise you, I will sit on his neck every day to see that the job is done. And I get the impression, Chair, that our civil service does not, and it's not only in this department, Chair, it is all over, that we are not taking the interest of the ordinary citizen who is the taxpayer. Even a poor person is a taxpayer, Chair, because when that person walks into a shop, he is charged 14% VAT. We are not taking the interests of those people seriously, Chair. And there must be a change in the way we are doing things, in the way we are doing business. The department must remember that you are given this year a budget of 7 billion rand. That is taxpayers' money. What is expected, Chair, is delivery. And if you've given a job to somebody, Chair, and that person does not perform, all right, I realize that there's so much red tape and blue tape and yellow tape and all sorts of nonsense. But then, Chair, we must see that our contracts are designed in such a way that no performance, you pay a fine. Unless we do that, Chair, that's what we do in private business. If you've been given an assurance that your house will be delivered on a particular day, and it goes beyond that, and that contractor is subject to a fine. And it seems to me, Chair, that because we are not working with our own money, and you must consider taxpayers' money entrusted to you, to see that you get the maximum out of that money. Otherwise, Chair, we will slide and slide and slide and use billions and billions and billions, Chair. In the end, Chair, the folk from South Africa shall not know African if we don't work according to what the people expect us to work, Chair. Thank you.
I'm trying to imagine, Mr. Abram, if nothing was working, whether we will still be alive in this country. To an extent that, you know, when we are told that there is a maize surplus of 4 million tons, our own government goes out and finds markets for private farmers, and they make billions of rands, and they go to banks smiling. If nothing was happening and working, whether those private farmers would not have been earning any foreign income. I'm just thinking aloud. So that we are able to be careful in what we are saying. We don't make generic and generalized statements. I'm trying to find, you know, us ourselves having to be able to say, yes, there are shortcomings, but not anything and everything is not working.
I haven't said that.
Mr. Pandara?
I would just like to clarify a point that was said by one of this members, that, and I don't want to come up for what happened in the past, but it, all accounts are that in 1994 that that Africana was in a good condition. I read the docket on the Africana, and at that time, this boat was actually in a very good condition. Thank you. I just need to clarify that.
If I were in your seat, position, you know, DG and DDG, I would have said to myself, let these members of the committee come and join yourselves when the boat is about to sail. Mm-hmm. That's what I would have loved us to do if I were in your position. To short-circuit a number of questions requiring a number of responses, so that also on our own we are able not only hearing you talking, but practically being there on that boat, sailing forever hours. That is what is just coming through my head. Because what we really need to see at the end of the day, it is for us to be able to say, let's go get into that boat. We have been to Simonstown. We have seen Africana and the state in which it was. We did also listen to the Navy saying they got the boat in a serious state of disrepair. And we all asked a number of questions as to whether the state has had any recourse to Smith Amandla. That's because the processes are still sub judice as we speak. There are investigations that are happening. Whether or not we can be able with certainty respond on those kinds of questions, I'm not sure. That's because there are those investigations that are taking place. The cases with the Hawks, as I'm told. Those are the kinds of issues for me. I'm really, you know, thinking that we might just have to find ourselves getting onto those boats and be able to sail with yourselves, of course, because on our own you know, we might find ourselves, you know, with all sorts of punches, you see. You shall be the referees and the captains. DGG or DG?
Honorable Chairperson, let me start by saying the following. I'm in the public service for 18 years now. I started at the bottom as an admin clerk. And I want to speak to Honorable Gayle, Honorable Van Dalen, and Honorable Abram. The public service for me is not a job. It's a calling.
You can only speak to
Honorable
Chair.
Honorable Chair.
You can only speak to a meeting.
Okay. Let me speak to the Honorable Chair to the meeting. The public service for me is a calling. And I lead a team of dedicated officials who work 24/7 around serving our people. We accept your oversight role. We accept your criticisms of us. But I think there's no one that is more keen for these vessels to be on the sea than ourselves. We work every day. I get a briefing about the status of the vessels, where it is, what is the processes. If this was only in the hands of ourselves, and we don't want to criticize anyone else, we will take this, what you've said to us, as wise counsel. But I can assure you that we are very keen to get these vessels onto the sea. Honorable Chairperson, you were reading my mind, because this is exactly what we want to do. When these vessels, I can say today estimated times, but I've deliberately decided as the new acting DDG not to give dates. Because in my mind, I know I get briefed every day about when these dates, possible dates of these vessels to be there. But I want to be truthful to you, because if I give you the dates now, for some other reason, other institutions this must assist us to comply with those things. They don't comply. I phoned them myself. We work with Lloyds. We work with SAMHSA. In fact, yesterday we were some of our officials were meeting with SAMHSA. We are meeting with we are working with the Navy and eating every day. Honorable Abram, through the chairperson, your question about what is happening now on the sea. You know, these vessels are not the only strategy to deal with poaching. We have an integrated process. There is a fast boat, small craft that we have.
You see, members.
I want to respond to the question, Chairperson, because
members, another challenge that we're confronted with in the same issue that we're dealing with is the fact that information that goes out there also goes to your prospective poachers, Paul. So you're dealing with security information that can also come back to haunt us. I'm just warning us as we move forward. Yes, we have to do our oversight work, but the line can be very thin. Who knows that if we were to dish out more and more such precise information, that you are equally sending information out there to your prospective enemies, if you like, of the state, to an extent that we get ourselves a lot more compromised. I just thought, let me just make that point as we respond, the department responding to some of the questions that have been raised. I just thought, let me just sensitize ourselves. Yes, we may decide that at some point, you know, on such sensitive information, we need to have our own our own session in camera, if you like. So that we are able to get to satisfy ourselves fully without having to beat about, you know, the bush. I'm not suggesting that you are doing that. You are responding, and I hear you, and the train of thought is literally responding, you know, openly to all these questions being raised. But again, the line is thin, if not getting more and more thicker, between us receiving information and also others out there receiving same information. Because what is to be written out there, and some of us, you know, getting information out there to your prospective poachers and poachers themselves, the line is getting more and more actually blurred than thin.
You are, I think today you are like a Sangoma. Respectfully, Honorable Chairperson, because you are reading my mind about this matter.
I am a white person.
Because I wanted to explain what we do to the committee, but also to caution that this issue about patrolling our coast, it's not a DAF singular department process. We have small craft that are doing inshore patrols in strategic areas. We've identified those high levels of poaching areas. However, we don't want to tell the poachers we are going to come there and there. Secondly, we also have all, there's about 4,500 vessels which is registered on our system. 1,200 of them, fishing vessels, is active, and we monitor them through what we call a vessel monitoring system, a VMS. We would one day hope to invite the PC, the Portfolio Committee, to go and see how we do this thing. But the haze in certain areas with the Navy, the Defense Force, the Air Force, around certain issues, around enforcement. So it's not only us that deals with this process. We have an integrated approach around those things. But the details, what we do and how we deploy the forces jointly and collectively, that is an operational matter which we don't want to say too much of that details. The other questions which deals with the issue about the investigation, Honorable Chairperson, that investigation has been done by the public protector around the previous tender, and it's been done the process which you have correctly said is sub judice. We are not in a position to respond to any of those things that Honorable Member van Dalen has raised, because our department is subject to the investigation. As all of us, we are sitting here, the Hawks are investigating all of us. So any reply or question about the investigation must be directed to the appropriate law enforcement agencies. So on that matter, we are not in a position to deal with this thing. Honorable van Dalen also raised this matter about our interim contractors. It is unfortunate that it's only one contractor that always gets mentioned. There are two interim contractors, Damon Sapiats and Nordic. They are doing separate work. And the question about Nordic, these companies have, in our understanding, have expressed their relationship towards the previous tender. In our records, they were not part of that old tender, Nordic. So this continuation of this innuendos, which is not factual, is not helping us. If people have facts about that these companies that were our interim contractors were part of these allegations that has been made, they must bring those evidence, but we, in our, we have satisfied the processes, we've informed Treasury, we've gone through the necessary processes of the department. And remember, honorable members in committee, these interim contracts are exactly what we brought to this committee to say our urgency to get the vessels sorted out. The parallel process, honorable member Abram, I have explained in our presentation, those dates are there, that we are, while we have this interim contract for 6 months, we have started the adverts for this tender was advertised in the 7th of June, last Friday, in the tender bulletin and in two national newspapers. The specifications of this tender, the person that was appointed, Mr. Kevin Denning, his name, has been advising us and assisting us around the specifications. 95% of all jobs and the value of the contract must be South Africans. It's written in the specifications of this document. We have clear rules and clauses in that specification document around complying to South African law, around everything, around safety, around transformation and employment equity. All of those is written in that specifications document with the technical requirements that is needed in the document. And we have the specifications is further that this will be a 5-year contract. And the issue about transferring of skills, assisting the vessel management in South Africa, we want part of that process. It's very clearly written in that specifications document. The cost of the interim service providers, Damen Shipyards is 5 million, and Nautic for the crewing is 55 million rand, both for the fishery protection vessels and research vessels. The cost that was paid to the Navy is 31.5 million rand. I hope I'm just don't want to miss any question. These other honorable members, Member Paleso and Member Honorable Member Paliso Moswane, you are right, we are really, really also very much eager to get these vessels onto the sea. I wish, and I have, I don't want to make it public here, but I've invited Honorable Member Van Dalen to come to my office so that he can see, because he's sending me regular emails to come and see and meet with me and see what we are doing. So we don't have anything to hide. Any member of parliament or any member of the public, we have an open door approach and policy so members can come. All of these officials that are here even today, they know they can come straight to the DDG. They don't have to come to other people. I have an open door policy around this thing. And I've invited Honorable Member Van Dalen so that you can understand and see how we work. And I don't want to personalize this, but when it's dark, I leave my house. When it's dark, I leave my office. 7 days per week, not till Friday, 7 days per week. The replacement of the Afrikaner, we have started with that process. We have estimated it will cost about 1 billion rand. We are working with Department of Science and Technology. We are preparing a proper, detailed application to the Treasury through our department. But we also want to work with DEA, Department of Environmental Affairs, with Department of Science and Technology, because this vessel, although as a Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, this research vessel that we want to replace the Afrikaner, which has still 5 years left, to operate, will be an asset not only to us but to the government as a whole. I think I've answered maybe I can also just emphasize, Honorable Member Abraham, through the chairperson. We do, Mr. Keith Govender was behind me, and I would maybe ask if it's a possible chairperson. So that this thing that I talked about, the driver's license, that we maybe ask Keith to explain that process of the SAMHSA, so that honorable members understand it is not only going to SAMHSA and say, we want now our certificate. But Mr. Keith Govender, Mr. Teba Matobo, who's behind me, they know. Every day, I want to have an update on these vessels. And we have regular meetings, weekly meetings, to understand what is wrong, what is repaired, what is the delays, all of those things. So members, please trust us. I know you might have been disappointed in the past. We are more keen than you to get these vessels because it's an asset for us to deal both with research and with the issue about protecting our source. I hope, Chairperson, respectfully, that I have been able to answer to all of the questions. And I want to publicly invite and say to the honorable members that we will invite you. You will be our first guest on that day when these vessels are ready. Because then you can understand maybe the complexity of this process. There is no official that is deliberately trying to delay this process. We work with multiple agencies, multiple departments to get this process finalized. I can give you a date here, but you're going to keep me to that date. My officials have told me this is the date that we will be ready with all of them. I'm not going to share that date with you because I want them to be accountable for that date to me. Then when we come here, Honorable Chairperson, we will invite you to come to be our first guest on this vessel. Thank you very much.
You shall be having the swim here.
We also have swimming lessons for honorable members that we have strength that can do that.
Mr. Pandara?
Yes, just to clear up a point, Mr. Stevens has said that he invited me to his office for a briefing, which I acknowledge he did. I did write him a letter back, though, and told him that I was going to have a briefing like that with Ms. Sue Middleton about a year ago. And maybe she can confirm that that meeting was set up and it was cancelled on the last day. And then it was from orders from you, Mr. Chairman, and the Minister, that I was not allowed to meet any officials unless it was facilitated through you. So maybe if you can give me permission to meet with him, then that would solve the problem now. And I would gladly, because I also want to see the fishing department succeed. But I cannot every time I want to speak to an official ask your permission for it. I think that's not right. So, and I can send that email to you where I got that answer. So I don't want to get into trouble from you. Maybe you lay complaints against me because I speak to your officials and maybe they tell me things that you don't want them to tell me. I don't know. Maybe it will interfere with your secret meetings. I don't know.
Okay, I will give you that tip. Okay, members, is there anything else that you, Mr. Kvalisa?
Chairperson, the only documents that this portfolio is going to acknowledge is official documents that we get into this meeting. Documents outside or collected outside this meeting, we will not take responsibility or endorse such documents. That one I want to make clear. So, Chairperson, what I also want to clarity from Mr. Stevens. If I couldn't hear you saying that, do we have the necessary warehouses in South Africa?
Mama, your point relates to local manufacturing of vessels.
Yes, because there is capacity in the country. Natural capacity. That's what I said.
Chairperson, as far as my knowledge is, we have a process where we have an MOA with DTI. We are in the process of expanding that MOA, and in a briefing with DTI, they have a special process of vessel building. Now, through that experience of them, we are quite sure that the capacity do exist in our country, and through DTI they want to expand that capacity to enhance the issue about vessel management, building of vessels. Now, if we are at these big vessels like the Afrikaner that we want to commission, I'm not sure if we are in a position to build the whole vessel in South Africa. There could be parts of it that will have to be contracted overseas. But that is something that will be done through a due diligence process. Maybe I can also, Chairperson, this former question about the DTI vessels, which was raised by Honorable Van Dalen. But just to conclude on Honorable Paliso's question is that, yes, I am convinced that we do have the capacity, and that capacity has been grown, has been enhanced through DTI, through the incentive schemes, and we are expanding our relationship with them. So I'm convinced about. This issue about the DTI vessels. Now, once again, there's a misnomer or a innuendo that is incorrect. This thing about the vessels that DTI has provided to small-scale fishers and to cooperatives, we are finalizing a comprehensive support program for small-scale fishers, which includes a intergovernmental, because it's not only DEF that must deal with this support program, because our mandate does not only allow us to have a silo approach to this. So if we want to empower small-scale fishers, this comprehensive program will be finalized soon, this proposed implementation plan, and the costing of it, and all of the support, which includes vessels, equipment, training, possible financing, will be completed. And then next week we have an intergovernmental forum with about 9 government departments that we think can contribute to that implementation plan. So we must not. There's no issue about powers and functions when DTI, a other government department, support a specific program and policy of our department. We're talking about a collaborative government. We are not working in isolation of each other, and we must support each other's programs. So I hope that clarify that matter that was raised by the Honorable Member Van Dalen.
Chairperson, you see now currently the department is chartering vessels, and naturally, you know, the market out there works this way, that when they know that it's a government department, and they know that the government department has a problem, naturally the costs go up. So I would love to know, for example, you have in the interim the Compass Challenger that you have chartered. Now, for what period have you chartered these vessels, and what are the costs involved? And Chairperson, I just want to make one point very clear. You see, the way I see the duty of a parliamentary oversight committee is to hold the department accountable. When we sit here, we may be the best of pals outside, I don't drink, but we might be going for drinking sessions together. But when we come here, we are representing the people of this country. And we need to keep the department accountable. And departmental officials must know one thing, that there is nothing personal. It is a job that we have to do. And you must accept that there has been challenges in the department. There has been problems in the department. And one of those challenges and problems is that you have not had a stable leadership. Now, I don't blame you for that, but that contributes to some of the problems that we have. And it is incumbent upon a parliamentary committee to see that it gets the necessary answers from the department. And I want to make one further comment, Chairperson. And that is that the sort of questions we have asked here, you look at newspapers over the last 6 months, you will see that they are full of possible security breaches taking place in our waters and things like that. What we are asking is nothing out of the ordinary. It is things that are known out there. And I don't think that we should be muzzled when it comes to wanting honest, sincere, and genuine information. To do otherwise will be going against the grain of keeping departments accountable. I cannot be a pelly-pelly when it comes to this forum. Outside, I'll be your best friend. Over here, we need to see that we account to one another, that we know exactly what is going on. We must know in how deep waters are we swimming. Otherwise, we will drown. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Abram. I wanted to say that as well to Mr. Steele. Yeah, we've had active TTT. Getting different answers. So we're not at war with you, but we're doing our work as well as you're doing your work. Our zone threats and report to our people as well. And most of our committee are in coastal areas. Now, these two companies that you outsourced to, Damon and Nutek, what are they? Are they BEE compliant? Is there any skills transfer? Why I'm asking this, Mr. Stevens? I check most of the government departments. If you talk of being compliant, the very poorest of poor, they are not considered. The gainers are considered. So that's also something that we need to look at. It's not a matter of when you be compliant, it's a certain type of person. Are they being compliant? And also what I picked up is that when these companies, when they say they're doing skills transfer, they only hire the laborers. Nothing more than that. So we need, whether if you cannot answer us in this session, but it's very important that we know, because we report to people. My area is the former Transdive sector. And those people do not even know whether you exist. They don't know that. Thank you.
Around the BEE compliance of
of if I'm correct, those are the two questions. The Compass Challenger is it's a annual. We've contacted this company. You must understand also we work closely with the industry. We've contacted this, we've chartered this vessel for a what we call a recruitment survey, which will be a survey that will contribute to establishing the sardine and anchovy TAC or quota. That specific amount of money which that contract is, I don't have at my disposal now, but I can make that available. One of the officials are just trying to find that exact amount of money. The two interim contractors are both DE compliant. I can't tell you exactly the level of DE compliance that they have. The accreditation now can also make that available. But Honorable Gaila, I can assure you through the chairperson that we are very vigilant around this matter about the transfer of skills, because we also work closely with other institutions, because the marine industry, to be blunt, we are also concerned that you don't have enough historically disadvantaged individuals that work in that industry. You would have seen this recently that our department have advertised bursaries and some of those areas that for those bursaries that we want to give is targeted at coastal communities with specific skills around marine industry. So it is in our interest to also ensure that there's a broad base of skills and that we are not dependent on one particular expertise or skill set which is based in one or particular or a few companies that exist now. It is a task that must be done together with SAMHSA, with the Department of Transport to build the capacity in the marine industry sufficiently. The Compass Challenger will be 10 million rand to do that that survey.
You see, Sir Stevens, the problem with your adverts, they don't go to those poor people down there. Mm-hmm. Let us be very clear. Those people, some of them don't even read the newspaper you're talking about. So what I would suggest that you use a local community radios. That's why we don't have skills translated. That's the bottom line. Those people don't read Sunday Times or Cape Times or even Daily Dispatch for that matter. So that is the problem with this effort. Use the local radios so that those poor people down there in those coastal areas can know there is an effort. Thank you.
Maybe just on that one, to an extent that you might even wish to get that advert through to members themselves, so that in their respective areas of work, we are able to distribute that advert for those that shall, of course, have an interest. And this is Pariso. I think we're wrapping up on this one.
We are wrapping up, Chairperson. Thank you very much. You know, coming from local government, I like to speak about reality matters because I come from bread and butter issues. I am not familiar to be at such a high level. I was familiar to be on the ground, and I'm still on the ground like a country. Chairperson, the districts are able to distribute such information if it goes to provinces and provinces, even the national office can distribute it straight to the districts, the metro, and they have your local to add to communication. I think we did speak once on the communication issue, and we proposed previously the districts, the metros, and you've got your service, municipal service points, where there is information boards that are there for your local communities, especially in your rural areas, because your municipalities are everywhere, all over the show, Chairperson. Truth of the matter is, this department is now trying to reach the ground that had never happened before. And Chairperson, I have to say this. Some of these things that we inherited were claimed here, that we got those healthy vessels 1994. I would like such a report from a department giving us a document to benefit also from that information, so that we can familiarize ourselves with such information, Chairperson. Lastly, but not least, Mr. Stevens, I wish to know the satellite offices that we proposed. Are they now in the different areas that were identified along the coast, so that there can be information accessible to those people on the coastline? Are those offices operational? Where is the process of that offices? I thank you, Chair.
Mr. Taylor?
Yeah, no. I wanted your proposal, Chairperson, in line with what Honorable Panison said, that we don't throw away your proposal. We add your proposal to Panison's one. Municipalities and your proposal, we must get it, because you know the problem with the Eastern Cape. There's a lot of fighting within municipalities. So let us also get that, so that we can, we are all field workers. Unfortunately, I'm a master of the field work. Not even one. So let's get your proposal with us together. Thank you.
Part of what we also supposed to have gotten when we got the report last week, in terms of your preparedness for these processes, is an indication about the extent in which decentralization has been beefed up. That you're not going to have people, you know, all coming out of wherever to flock in Cape Town in the processes of an application. So I think that question relates precisely to that. When the process begins in July, are we going to expect people to be delivered those services for application processes? And how many of those satellites do you have? I wonder if you can also, it may not necessarily be for now, but for future. Mentioning has been made about, you know, the charter on fisheries having been, you know, to be blunt, stopped by GTR. And of course I'm aware about the complexities related to fisheries, that you cannot all lump them under one charter. To an extent that you'll have to, you know, disintegrate, or what's the best way to use, have the respective, you know, species charters, if you like. If you can can just comment on that as part of the whole transformation process.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just in addition, maybe to also assist around this thing, which to inform the House, the Honourable Committee, we have what we call fishery development workers, which is across the coast, and their work is basically to, there are 19 appointed now. If we have enough money, we want to appoint 100 of them. Unfortunately, we don't have. But they are the interface between the department and the communities, the fishing communities. And they stretch from Richards Bay in Pondoland, where Honorable Gaila comes from, to, I know Honorable Palisa will not be happy with me. We still have to appoint the fishery development worker in the Northern Cape. That process has been delayed. But they are also part of distributing information. Secondly, we hope to finalize part of the rights allocation process through GCIS, a agreement with all coastal community radio stations and community newspapers. The honorable members are correct. Our messages are not getting through only the mainstream media, and that's why we've worked with, we are, with the systems of GCIS, are trying to spread these messages through community mediums like community radio stations in all four coastal provinces. GCIS is the Government Communications Information Services, which is in the precedent, I think. We are working with them because all of these things must go through GCIS for approval. Honorable members, around the decentralization, we have an office in Saldanha, in Mossel Bay, Lamberts Bay. We, in East London, we have an office with in Durban, which we are sharing services with KZN and SMVelo. Some of our officials are there, and St. Helena Bay also. We can give the assurance, that's one thing I can give the assurance, because I'm leading that, what we call the fishing rights allocation process, that steering committee, that we will have, when the application process is ready, we will have published the areas across the coast where people can go and apply for the rights. We are sorting out all of the administrative processes, and when as soon as that is ready, we will inform the public and the communities around where they can go. We are in the process of appointing what we call a rapid response unit that will go and assist with our there are officials that are now full-time dedicated just to the rights allocation process from each directorate, and they will work full-time on this process. You will also see they will be differently branded, and we will. Their work is just to assist people around the long-term rights allocation process. By the end of June, we hope to have completed that operation center in the department. The issue about the charter, Chairperson, the Minister is very keen for us to proceed with the establishment of the Fishery Transformation Council, which is provided in the current MLRA. We are seeking legal advice around the process, and as soon as we have resolved that, we would start with that process of establishing that structure. Now, also on the advice of DTI around the issues about charters, because of the, what is this act, the PVE Act that is now promulgated, they are saying that separate industries should not have their own charters. I'm speaking under correction, but we intend complying to that new broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act, which was promulgated recently or a few years ago. Finally, I just want to say we receive the counsel from this committee in the spirit that it is given. I'm a very passionate person, so when I speak also passionately, it's not that I'm disrespectful to the honourable members. So, Abraham has left now because he thought that maybe I heard that he think that we are not taking the heed to the advice that has been given. We do. We are counselled by the chairperson and honourable members. So we are accountable to the structure, and we appreciate the oversight that has been provided, and we will work with this committee for the success. I hope I've been able to answer these questions around this process. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson,
would I be correct to suggest that we still have to receive a briefing on the state of marine?
Yes,
don't you think we should just move straight to that?
Yes, Chairperson, I was going to also ask, when are we going to see, because I saw on our program we are not aggressive enough in terms of our bill that has to come to us. That is sort of the question that is going to address the small-scale fisheries policies implementation. So that bill needs to be prioritized in the program, and that is not what I'm seeing in the program, Chairperson. And we need to get information on that. Although we got the administrative nitty-gritty, we really need to get the real bone of contention. Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, that's where I come from. I'm from Namakwaland. Chairperson, what I also want to say, I appreciate the help I got when I go with constituency community to the department. I appreciate the effort they put in when I come there with community members, even from the Northern Cape, even from KZN, even from Eastern Cape, even from Western Cape. When I come with them to the department, I always got an open door, officials that are willing to help me with those people. Because those of the Northern Cape must come and slip over, those of the Eastern Cape, those of KZN, they must come and slip over. They do slip, even if I'm not in Cape Town. The department wait, they make effort so that the people can sleep somewhere, and when I arrive the next day, they will accommodate me with those people and some of the things, there are progress in some of the things the department do help me. So what I want to say, Chairperson, something is happening in the department. So there is no such that nothing is happening. I just want also to clear that, give people their respective respect of the delivery, service delivery that they are delivering to the people on the ground, because people will say that these people are lying. I come with the member and I was helped. How come that there is now something that is saying nothing is happening? Something is happening because the bill must come. I want that clarity, Mr. Stevens. But because that bill will help us with the implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy, and I will be the first one to knock again at the door of the department if that bill is not coming and our people are not getting right. And that's why I'm so eager for us to engage in the question of the seals, because the seals are eating our snook up.
Let's get straight to the marine resource with the shortest possible time. Those of us who want to have some tea is outside numbers, quietly out, quietly in. Okay, let's straight to the issues.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. This is an attempt to have a brief just report on the status of the South African marine fishery resources. But as an introduction, this report was published in December 2012. This is also a product on an annual basis. We do this status of resource report internally, but then we publish it publicly every second year biannually. The report is a summary of the collective effort of the research team in our department, and it's data that has been collected over the past plus minus 100 years. The report covers all of the managed fishery resources in the country. It provides for each resource, it provides a quick view of assessment of the status, the introduction to the resource, the history and management of the resource, the research and the monitoring that's been done, and the current status and future projections of the resource. But today's presentation, I just want to give a summary of that status of the marine fishery resource as a whole, so that you can see in a visual way what we're talking about. And then we want to talk about the detailed overview from the report on the key resources, which is commercially harvested, Cape Hakes, the abalone, the West Coast rock lobster, and lionfish. Now this summary, colleagues, in a very, honorable members, in a very brief way, if you look at the vertical arrow and it talks about the fishing pressure and it's color-coded, and the stock status, which is the horizontal arrow, which is also color-coded. What basically in a summary, without going into detail, I wish I had a thing that I can point, is that you can see where it's green, it is where what we can call, what we can call healthy stocks, the fishery resources that can, which are optimally harvested and in a stocks abundant or optimal, and fishing pressures light to optimal. The red and the orange is those fish species that are either heavily depleted, or depleted, or under tremendous, both of this under tremendous fishing pressure. So those are the over decades of research and the issue about overfishing in some of those resources. In all of them, we are now developing what we call OMPs, operational management programs, and recovery targets for each of them, for those overfish fishing areas. Cape Hakes, we are talking about shallow water and deep water hakes. Now this graph, the blue part talks about, the dark blue talks about the deep sea trawl. But I want to, if you can put it here, it shows that there was a reduction of the fish, but we are now, if you look at the red line, there's a recovery process that is taking place, and we are updating the data from 2010 to 2013. This is also the high value species. This value of this fish species, both which we lump together as Cape Hakes, equals that of all other fish species together, combined. So this is a very, very key species. It's also the only South African fishery certified by MCS, the Marine Stewardship Council, and there's lots of requirements to be certified by MSC. Our assessment in 2006 indicated that shallow water was underutilized, deep water was overexploited. Now, the graphs to the right indicate the different species and the targets that we have set as a pre-fished percentage of biomass as pre-fished, and you can see in both of them there's a slight increase. In the target was 21% was depleted, and was and we reached a target of 24%. Our OMP, operational management procedure or plan, is aim is to recover the abundance of the deep water egg. The TACs was reduced from 2007 to 2009. The resource status is now far more optimistic, and deep water egg is approaching its target level more rapidly than expected. Abalone is one of those very famous, or should I say infamous, species that we are talking about. This resource, if you can just look at the years and the reduction of the TAC in the graft, it suffered serious decline despite our best efforts at management. We have closed this fishery in 2008. There were drastic TAC reductions. We have implemented a turf system. We've closed the recreational fishery in 2003, and we closed the commercial fishery in 2008. And it was reopened conditionally in 2010. But this is a fishery that is really under pressure, and it is one of those areas where a huge amount of poaching is taking place. The graphs which we show to you there, it's basically trying to illustrate if you reduce poaching, it's a formula that we use to project the levels of the resource, and the key to saving this resource is to reduce the poaching. And then we can increase the TAC for the commercial rights holders. Our projections indicate that recovery is possible if poaching can reduce, as I said. Our recovery plan includes gradual increases in TACs if poaching can be reduced by 15% per year. There's also a picture how abalone, because sometimes people don't know how abalone is in the natural environment. That's how it looks in, I think it is in Hang Club or one of those areas, in Zone C, I think. This is what I said before. We in the Eastern Cape, we spoke about this earlier, that this 3-year experimental fishing underway to determine the resource abundance and the productivity, and if we can have a commercial fishery there. There's also what we can report is that about 40% increase in our compliance effort in the last few years, with more patrols, with more joint operations with the other law enforcement agencies. But we acknowledge that catching the criminals when they're out of the water is not what we want. The poach abalone, 60% of the poach abalone is below the reproductive age. Now abalone is also a slow growing animal, and this is one of the figures that is really a concern to us, that 60% of these abalone that are poached are undersized and is below the reproductive age. The levels of poaching are far higher than the total or the TAC that we provide. So abalone is one of those species that is one of the serious concerns. The West Coast rock lobster is another celebrity species. it generates plus minus 400 million rand per year. In this sector, it's about 4,200 people. We've updated that figure that you might have received. So once again, we just wanted to alert you to that. This is more the updated figure. This resource traditionally focused just on the West Coast, but resource shifts resulted in three new areas being opened up east of Hankel, Cape of Hankel. The clients in Ketzer since the 1950s had a number of causes, including changing in fishing methods, the stricter control of catches, declines in abundance, reduced growth rates, and also the issue about climate change and environmental changes in general. This resource is currently severely under pressure and depleted. It is estimated that it is 3.5% of pre-fish levels for males larger than 75 millimeter in length. The recovery plan aims to recover resource by 35%. That is to about 4.8% of pre-fish levels by 2021. There seems also to be sometimes a misunderstanding that the department have, and I want to state it again publicly, the department, all of us, from the minister to the most junior official, we are committed to these recovery plans. These recovery plans are written in the minister's performance agreement with the president, in the performance agreement with those fishery managers that are working with these things. But a recovery plan is also not static. It's a process that has procedures of reviewing on an annual basis, advised by thought through processes and it's in collaboration with best practices in the world and with the scientific community, both internal of our organization and external. This recovery plan, the indication that the resource is responding, but we can't say with certainty now because it's only in the third year of recovery. What I can also say, this is one of the resources that will be, I won't say earmarked, but the pressure is to be abundantly available or broadly available for the small scale fishery communities. Lionfish is multi-species, about 200 species. It's a multi-sectoral fishery. The subsistence and small scale sector includes about 8,000 recognized fishes. It's also an adjusted figure which we have now on our records, more or less. 85% of whom are harvest lionfish. The commercial boat-based fleet has 455 boats, but only contribute 6% of the total value of marine fisheries. The recreational sector in this, which in lionfish, is plus minus 4,000 boats and about 40,000 people who purchase permits annually. So it's to be corrected, it's about 36,000 now that we're talking about. The spin-off revenue estimated into the billions of rands annually. There's been a study being done by the recreational fishing sector, economic study, which they shared with us. Lionfish is also caught as a bycatch in a number of other fisheries, including trawl and crab fisheries. This intense fishing pressure has led to widespread depletion of lionfish stocks. Catches are now far smaller than they were in the 80s and the 90s. In some of these fisheries, we have emergency measures in place since 2000, or 13 years now. And it does have some, appear to have some results for some lionfish species that is at least that we can show. We are of the opinion that this must remain in place for the foreseeable future as part of our recovery approach. This also offers a huge amount of potential for growth because in this approach that we have around a multi-sector or multi-species approach for small-scale fisheries, lion fish is one of those sectors that or fisheries that we think we can have a potential to enhance this basket that we're talking about for small-scale fisheries. The bad news was the bad medicine, and this is now proven to scientific work being done from our departments, broadly with many scientific organizations. We are in a process even, don't want to open a can of worms, but the issue about indigenous knowledge and experience of communities to all conclusions lead to that many of our key marine fisheries resources have been overfished in the past. So our resources therefore impoverished and catches are often far less than they could be. But however, we are positive that we know that something can be done, and just something that we're talking about that can be done to increase the productive levels of fishery is also in joint collaboration with our communities, not see them as outsiders, but that we jointly with the industry, with the government, with the communities can do much more with recovery. Our current recovery plans, many of them showing positive results. We have to be, I always quote the scientists that work with us, he said the reason why Desmond we focus on the recovery of resources is not to put them in a museum, but is to utilize that resources for future generations. So sometimes the here and now we are pressurized, but I think we must have this view that we have to conserve these resources so that generations to come can benefit it, and that we can then eventually make the productive levels of these fisheries grow greater. We said the short-term pain is sometimes this medicine is sometimes very unpopular, but we have to plan like this, and we have to be firm, and so that we can achieve medium and long-term gains that will make a significant positive contribution to food security and alleviating coastal poverty. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the report, the presentation. I trust that all of you had sight of the report that was published in 2000, a very detailed report. If not, we can provide you, all honorable members, with that that report. Thank you.
Members, that is the proofing. I thought you were also going to say something about aquaculture. Maybe just in conclusion.
Yeah, Chairperson. I think a month or 3 weeks ago, Cabinet approved the aquaculture strategy that we have. There's a process that we are aligning our aquaculture program with also, because our mandate is broader, that we're looking at aquaculture, freshwater fish, but that we also, that aquaculture becomes a catalyst to ensure that the pressure that is on the wild caught fish gets lighter, I don't know, for lack of a better English word, that we then facilitate the process where we have a bigger rollout program. We are developing an implementation plan around this rollout of aquaculture projects. We've committed ourselves ourselves to start 5 fish farms. We have we work with the current industry in collaboration with them, because part of our work is also to permits and so on, but that we also part of the small scale fishery rollout program, a comprehensive support program. One of these is to provide alternatives to aquaculture, and that still remains one of the key instruments for us to deal with the pressure on the natural resources that we do have.
Okay, Mr. Spariswa, so your hand, Mr. Van Dalen, Mr. Spiros Masano.
Thank you for this presentation. Chairperson, you just helped me once when you asked about the aquaculture. Because the question I have with the stock recovery, is there any plans in the department for alternative projects, both from let me say from the cluster, DAF, DTI, Public Works, which is also out there along the coast. I want, what is the alternative plan if the recovery, by the time of right allocation, the recovery with the climate change and global warming factors, taking that into consideration, what is the plan? What can we make when the frequency of the rainfall are further cut out, and the industry available? Deel was van die werkerskort in die verlede. Hulle was die mense wat regtig net weggegooi was. Toe fabrieke toe maak, werke ingetrek word internasionaal, water type technische vaardighede gesoek is. Toe die vrouwens die hardste getref. Ek weet die DTI bil maak seker dat dit sal nie weer gebeur in die toekomst. Maar is daar een alternatieve plan vir projekte, vir werkskeping, vir voedselsecuriteit in termen van die kusgemeenskappe, wanneer die tijd kom of reed is, en daar is hier genoeg van hierdie recovery wat my bekommerd maak met die robbe, wat ek sal aanhou hammer of hulle nou wat vir soort NGO of wat vir soort wie gaan by mekaar maak om op my kop te ras. Ek sal aanhou vraag, by my kom die mense eerste, want hy, Robbe, het nogal een menselijke doel, hy het een menselijke doel wat helpt in die menselijke gezondheid, leven. En die Robbe vreet onze dinges op, die kus langs, en waar ek blij, stinkt het daar waar die Robbe is. Ons kan gaan weekend go forward tijd. So vir my is het baie belangrijk, soek die alternatieve plan wat ons gaan het op die tafel. Ek weet nie nou daar is nie, as ons die volgende keer een briefing krijg, laat ons dit krijg en hoor wat gaan dit wees. Die tweede een ons taal moet rechtig mekaar plan gee, oor hoe gaan ons die, oor die populatie, hoe gaan ons om verminder, om nie ons, want die vries die stok op dat gaan gerekawe word. So die president moet ingelig word oor die robbe wat die snoek vreet. Dankie.
Die robbe. Die robbe. Jo. Meneer Van Dalen.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, this department has come here before and they have said that we have actually created poachers and we have disenfranchised our fishers. And, you know, I agree equivalent. The reality is that people get about 120 rand a kilo for lobster if it is legally harvested and they do have a permit. And when, you know, when this 120 rand a kilo and the quota relates to about 25,000 rand a year, and people cannot sustain themselves on this quota. So, you know, what we are doing is they are actually having to steal 5 times more to get the same amount of money to survive. If we would give them a quota that is, say, 500 kilograms, then they would be able to survive on it. At the moment, if they poach, they actually steal about 2.5 tons to get the same amount of money, and that is the way our laws are prohibiting them to do their work. So I would say that if you give them quotas and decent quotas, then it would be in their interest not to illegally harvest rock lobster or any other fish. And it will go some way in alleviating the problem. And then also, you know, in the new fishing rights allocation that is coming up for the end of the year, rock lobster is not included. It only ends at next year. So is there going to be an interim aid? Or do people have to apply, or do they just have to wait for next year, you know, because, I mean, they are dependent on this money. Then I have also spoken to some various communities, and they have no problem at adhering to the law. And even the ridiculous ones that said they can only catch office hours. You know, but then everybody should be equal in front of the law, and everybody should be treated the same, they say. You know that 25% of all people are very honest, and then you have 25% that are very crooked, and then there's the 50% in the middle. They are swayed the way, you know, if there's law enforcement and they see everything is going right, they will also become honest, you know, if you can say it that way. So they say, well, you know, if everybody is treated the same and we need to sustain the rock lobster, we are prepared to help and not do anything illegal, but you know the department is not acting equally. They don't treat everybody equally, and then the source is not protected for everybody, because they are told that the season is closed and then the big ships are still taking out, and you know, why should they then not do it either? And then the recent WWF downgrading of the rock lobster to orange, can you tell us please how this is going to affect the rock lobster sales, and you know, is this a sign of the mismanagement of the stock? Please tell us, give us some more information about that. And then, Chairperson, the closing date for legislation I saw on the agenda was the 9th of June. This is a date when Parliament has said that any act or bill or amendment that needs to come through Parliament needs to begin. Now, the 9th was last week on Friday. And the comment time only closes at the 14th for the new bill. Does that mean that this bill is not coming to Parliament this year? Or have you handed it in? Maybe you can give us some assurance that it's handed in already. And if it's handed in, how could we hand it in without the comment period being closed? And then also, can you please inform this committee where the extra quotas of fish for the small-scale fishing policy is going to come from, as the expectation out there have been raised that a lot of communities will benefit from it, and that people would be able to apply for the fishing rights, and the people out there think that you know, everybody will be able to apply for it, and our estimation is that there will be between 50 and 100,000 people that we will be applying for fishing rights, as those expectations have been raised, and our resources are, by your own account, under quite severe threat. And then I read in the newspaper today, in the Afrikaans one, it says, "Niks weet beste skreef sterf uit." So it says this woman has gone to court and she's going to try and stop the quota, and then the court actually, or there was evidence led in the court that the crayfish is not actually a problem. I mean, this is what people and the judgment is coming tomorrow. I would like to see what it is. And then I say, this woman is crazy. Because she says it must be closed, and there's plenty of crayfish there. Why are they all so worried? But this department is telling us there's only 3% left of it. So please explain to us where all this crayfish is going to come from for the 50 or 100,000 people that is going to apply. Thank you.
Mr. Spiros Masana, followed by Mr. Gela and Inkos Tayokulu and Ms. Abra.
The aquaculture project. I just want to know where are these projects? In all, you know, it can't be in all the provinces. The aquaculture project. Where are they? The plan on it. And again, because I don't know too much about this thing. The Avalon. These abalones, they are everywhere, or they are in certain areas. Like here, you talk about Hansby and the Basalja. I just want to find out, are they just everywhere in the oceans, or there are certain places where you find them? Because I am aware that the poachers, they are very much after this abalone. And I don't have idea, you know. I'm from Limpopo. We don't have this ocean. We just have the dams and the Jinuka. Thank you.
Ms. Kira?
No, Chairperson. I'm here with a problem. I'd actually like to address you also, but then I've got a problem that Mr. Stevens is not going to hear what I'm saying.
I thought, Mr. Geller, you were saying you were sitting next to you with a problem.
I'm sitting with a problem. I'd like to address, but now I'm worried about Mr. Stevens. But let me try in English. So, Mr. Stevenson, I'm from the Eastern Cape, and all Gaylers are from the Eastern Cape. And people make a mistake, call it Gaylers. Gela, Umakhale, Dwana, and Ndusi from Pele, LED. Hear that. I'm born and bred, I grew up there. I know everything of the Eastern Cape. So nobody's going to tell me that person knows more Eastern Cape than myself. Mm-hmm. If I stand with you in Eastern Cape, rather than go up here today. Very clear. Now, what I'm saying, yeah, Chairperson. I don't know whether if it's next year's election. We're not in an election year. Mm. We're criticizing a department, and we expect you to do well. We are South Africans. Now, we then do not expect, as usual, when you criticize somebody, counters it. We try to help a department. Not dealing with a minister here. The matter that the minister from Northern Cape is not an issue. I criticize the Minister of Public Issues, Mr. Mercy, who's from my province, and he takes that positively because it's building the country. That's what we're doing. And I want us to take this in that spirit, you know. Now, Mr. Mtoba, I've dealt quite a lot with you. There in Twesa, there is a problem. The problem is not created by the department. Created by Parks Board. There's a lot of poaching going on there, and Parks Board does not want the local community to be involved. I'll give you the context of the people in that area. Created by Eastern Cape Parks Board. So that's where I'm from. So there is a problem there. We need to address that. The community wants to help the department to stop the poaching. But Parks Board, Eastern Cape Parks Board, is creating a problem for them. So we need to deal with that problem. Then, the 30,000 subsistence fisheries, are they all registered or... Your document is very good, Mr. Stevens. I'm happy about your document. On paper, it's very good. Are they a registered subsistence fishermen? And then you talk of 5 fish farms. Where do you plan in the Eastern Cape? Because the Eastern Cape starts from PE to Bondoland. Where would you If you don't, do you plan to have in the rural areas? I think I'm finished with Chairperson Malembaya.
Ms. Inkosta.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe one would need to get a clear understanding of the statement which says the resources have been overfished. Chairperson, if one may ask, aren't there any measures that the department applies with regards to controlling the fishing vessels? Or, in fact, I don't have a clear difference between a vessel and a ship and what, and a boat. But those big companies like ING and others who I understand have much power and much equipment to fish. If they fish, is the department not in control of saying they have certain allocations of kgs per day or per year or per month, so as to monitor them each and every minute they move out of the sea, so as to establish exactly whether they do follow the regulations for the department? That's the first question, Chairperson. Secondly, this is what I once saw on TV. I'm not sure whether it is done in our department or not, or ever the department has ever made it, done a research on sort of following what the countries in the East are doing, that of sort of I would say fencing certain portions in the sea and try and throw more or net more fish and keep them in those enclosures so that they could at any time, if they are well developed for market, to be then taken to the market in order to control the risk of this overfishing at times. Although one understands that there are poachers in every field of resources that is taking place. Chairperson, unfortunately, there is what I do not know exactly what is his name, but there are sea resources that develop on the rocks. I do not know what their name is. They are not appearing on this. Limpet, yes. And I understand along the east coast in KZN, areas like Esotwana and St. Lucia, where people have been issued permission to sort of remove a certain number of those creatures from the rocks for their family consumption. And I think there is that big flock of harvesters during certain periods. As a result, created NCS, or SMVL, for me say, SMVL, do have sort of a harsh hand on those people. I mean, do those people feed on those creatures on the rocks? They don't go into the sea, but they are just, they develop themselves on the rocks. They are brown in color. Don't get know the name of, but it's in a sense it is Imbazo. So, that's what I wanted just to get clarity on, because if one visits St. Lucia, you could find there are some demarcated spots where these people could go and sort of harvest those creatures. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Abrams, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Honorable Palisho expressed great concern now about the effects of climate change on our fishing resources. And I think it is something that the department has to take strongly into account. Now, in addition to that, Chair, You see, we have now a small-scale fisheries policy that is about to be implemented. There are plans to call on small-scale fishers and others to apply for rights. Now, if one looks at this overall presentation here, it sketches a very alarming situation. That certain species have been so overfished that they talk of a recovery period that nobody knows how long it will really take. Now, Chairperson, I also accept that the sea holds many secrets. Yeah, the sea has many secrets. But then one must also not be blind to what we are being told. Now, if one looks at, for example, abalone, we are told that it has been depleted to such a level that poachers are taking out of the sea not fully developed abalone, etc., etc. Now, Chairperson, if you look at the presentation and you look at what has been redlined here, depleted, heavily depleted, when we talk of abundant, we are talking of egreless shoal. Seaweeds are in abundance, but seaweeds have a particular purpose, not really for human consumption. Then you've got the round herring, yellowfin tuna. But if you look at all those on the red side chair, then this is mind-boggling. It is very worrisome. Now, Chairperson, what I am asking is, on the one hand, we are busy creating expectations. We are saying that we have a small-scale fishing policy. We are going to have an opportunity for people to apply and we should advertise it widely and all sorts of things. On the other hand, Chair, we have this kind of scenario. So what is, my brain is too small to be able to come to some other major conclusion. But what it does tell me, Chair, is that we will have to declare war. Now, we have, but for all intents and purposes, not really succeeded to declare war or win the war against poaching. If you take our wildlife on a daily basis, Chair, in spite of everything we are trying, we are losing rhino like no man's business. At the rate that it is carrying on, one of these fine days our children will only see rhinos in the museums. That's all, stuffed rhinos, dead ones. Now, we are heading the same way here, Chairperson, if, and I say it with a big if, Chair, the information given to us is properly documented, it is backed up by research, scientific research, then, Chairperson, the scenario is a somber one. Now, how do we move forward? I would go so far as to say, Chair, isn't it perhaps time that we need to deploy more than just coastal guards to watch the coastline? Isn't it perhaps time that our seashore, which is coastline, which is 3,000 kilometers, that we, on the shores of this coastline, wherever it's state-owned land, along the coastline, that we start fish farming with species that are relevant to the waters of those particular areas along the coast. That our people be given the opportunity, be assisted. And it means, Chair, it means, on the one hand, you have here one particular type of fishery where 3,500 jobs are at stake. But what I've heard is that we've got approximately 27,000 people involved in jobs along the coastline. And besides that, Chair, there are hundreds of others that are dependent in the value addition program. So, Chair, this requires thinking out of the box. We need to come with drastic, innovative plans. We cannot carry on as business as usual. Because if there is going to be very little or nothing left in the sea, Chairperson, then how are people going to live out of those particular resources? Because the resources will not be there. So yes, as Comrade Paliso said, we are dependent also, we are faced with a challenge of global warming, which is going to have an effect. But when you look at the West Coast lobster, it states here quite clearly that the resources have shifted. It's no longer the traditional waters and the traditional places. So what we need, Chair, and this is no joke, Chair, what we need is we need the department to seriously look at the situation of every species and come up with a drastic war plan. We are at war, Chair, and this is a war of survival. And Chair, we also need to accelerate in order to see that people who have lived off this resource are able to continue doing so by promoting aquaculture. What we hear, Chairperson, is yes, the DTI is doing something, some other State Department is probably doing something, Environmental Affairs is doing something, but I don't know whether there is a coordinated plan, Chair. And this is mind-boggling. And if it doesn't worry us, Chair, then I'm afraid. Then I feel that I wasn't worthy of being here. That's how serious I think this matter is, Chair. So, Chair, to make little Smolanyana, if you've got a little patch and you want to, a little hole in the trouser and you want to patch it up, that's not the answer. You'll have to look at the entire situation, Chair. And government will have to make funds available. If we are suddenly faced with war, Chair, then you're going to find the money. And we'll have to do that, Chair. Otherwise, Chair, we will be, those expectations that we are busy creating, Chair, are they genuinely based on deliverables? Will we be able to deliver to the people the type of catches that are required in order to be able to make a living? And we will have to be honest and straight with our people, that our people know exactly what is in store for them. But every, you see, Jefferson, the human being, is a very interesting animal. They say that old adage, necessity, is the mother of invention. And it is necessary for people to live. So we need to invent something, Chair. And I think, Chair, my solution, from the little bit that I know about these sectors, is that the coastline should be utilized for extensive farming with fish. Those resources that are whose habitats are in a particular part of the coastline, that we should accelerate, Chair. And the second issue, Chair, is that we should look increasingly at freshwater aquaculture cultivation. And the third issue, naturally, Chair, is that the department, to my mind, in collaboration with other stakeholder departments, DEA, DPI, whichever else are involved, should conduct a proper survey, a proper form of research, and there should then be, Chairperson, action on these things, accompanied by budgets. Otherwise, Chair, we are heading one way, and that is where we will reach a situation where this overfishing will continue, poaching will continue. When I said that we may have to look at drastic measures, we're at war. I think perhaps even the SANDF will have to come to the party. Otherwise, Chairperson, I can only see a gloomy picture ahead. And I'm being honest in terms of the information I have in front of me. I'm not here to say things to please anybody, Chair. I'm here to say what I see in front of me. And that's what it tells me. Thank you, Chair.
Mama Pariso, I'm sure you didn't like what you saw when you were trapping. What you saw when you were trapping, you trapped alone. And I don't think it was a nice one. So let's not do it again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Stevens, one would also like information about the Avalon farm that was a pilot in Hondensby Bay. If you don't have the relevant information now to your disposal, in the next briefing, we would like that information to be shared with the portfolio. What is the progress? Is the department involved? Because the board I see there at that gate is DST, Science and Technology, and Stellenbosch. And also, are you making a use of the indigenous knowledge? I will always ask this question. Because we have people, old people and our old elders who just know the seawater and know the bargains. Because I was showed and learned the bargains on the sea. As I said, global warming has changed that and climate change. But also minerals, the marine mining is also bringing its own climate change and in the water. It's also redirecting the streams of the, especially from where I'm coming, where people have to walk into the water to put in their muna boats to go fish. They have changed the streams. We fought a lot with your Transhex and your De Beers and your Alex course. So that is also one of the factors that we must investigate and keep in mind and be being briefed about that. The marine mining, how is it affecting? Because our rock lobster down there has relocated because they are disturbed. But the shallow water contractors is along the coast. Chairperson, department, the small-scale fisheries policy is not a pipe dream or a bad dream. It's reality. It comes and it comes to stay. Historically disadvantaged, never had the opportunity to be also owners of their wealth along the coast. This is the opportunity. We were not going to get lost or left behind again. It is here to stay.
as long as we live. Chairperson, the Minister of Transport has also pronounced on very, very good plans that are also intertwined with the plans that are here in front of us. That portfolio will also have to have a joint portfolio committee meeting with us for us to also benefit in terms of the transport, marine transportation future plan that the Department of Transport has for the people on the along the coast. And lastly, I'm a woman that will never be intimidated and told how to come to this portfolio and what questions I have to ask, what to select, what to say, and what not to say. That will never happen to me. I will say what I want to say. I will speak my mind. I will air. And I will air what, how I understand this presentation. And from my practical life experience, nobody is going to intimidate, no man is going to intimidate me here in this portfolio. I want to make that very clear, Chairperson, and I thank you.
There was a question that was asked not once, not twice. I think even last year, if not year before last. There was with this whole experimental abalone, thanks, man. With this whole experimental program on abalone, mentioning being made about how allocations have been done. But there would have been this one single one which really disturbed me. And I'm seated here, I'm also beginning to wonder as to how many other similar experiences are there in the country. What I am referring to here is your Hamburg, 130-odd beneficiaries on a 1.5 ton per annum. To an extent, number crunching being done, you hear people talking about those individuals, each earning no more than 300 rands per annum. I'm just wondering as to how many other similar experiences do we have in the country? And because we also raise a question, Mrs. Middleton, that relates to whether or not is there anything that can be done for those communities. Because the question that arose then still is now. Because this is not viable economically, whether are we able to do anything? These are communities who would have been each benefiting in terms of those licenses agreements at the time. I think 3 abalone a day or something to that effect. And then upon having introduced this 1.5 ton for that entire 130-odd, it meant that it was just going to be an effort not worth their while. The last point was I wanted to raise relates to the marine protected areas and the extent in which collaboration is done with the Environment Department. Dwebe is one of those. Zembelo is one of those. not Zambero. It is Coffee Bay. And a number Saint Lucia and a number of those other areas. How do we collaborate with the Department of Environment on these particular issues? To an extent that you are going to be able, you know, well, there is poaching that is taking place. But most importantly for me, it is more about those communities being able to benefit out of those catches that they would wish to have. But because there is this marine protected area, was the department not knowing whether you shall have granted those licenses or not, but here is a protected area, and the definitions are very clear. The area is protected. I think we are done with the questions, and then we just have the responses. Yeah?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members. I must maybe say from the start that your questions are really taken in the spirit of assisting us. We are not... Maybe there was a misunderstanding in the beginning. I think all of us have the interest of our country at heart. And in that context, I really take your questions and criticisms at heart. However, Chairperson, our role is also just to share information so that there is no, that we are all on the same wavelength around the facts about certain things. I don't even know where to start. I'm going to start with Honorable Mengo Paliso. Raised this issue about aquaculture, and many speakers have spoken about the issue about aquaculture. In our presentation of the state of the marine resources, we wanted to be frank with you around the nature of the status of our resource. We also know that it's a very bitter and drastic situation that exists. However, even in the presentation, we by indicating the reality, we are very confident also, and we have said that there are some positives around these things. Let me from the beginning say there are 22 fishery resources in the country which are commercially harvestable. Now, all of them have either a quota on an annual basis, or what we call a TAE, a total allowable effort. So those things are not changed. It's still... Don't interrupt me. Those issues are still... Those fishery resources is still the same. On an annual basis, our research are doing it, say, for West Coast Rock Lobster, the TAC that is approved. For instance, for example, is 2,200 tons. That 2,200 tons gets divided in all of the different sectors that must benefit from that 2,200 tons. So that is not, it's not changing. So there's no crisis around allocation of fishery resources to small-scale fishers because we use the existing resources. There's one peg which we then will distribute to potential fishers. Maybe I just wanted to clarify that particular point. The issues about aquaculture. Aquaculture currently in the department, we have 8 million rand for doing research and about 7 million rand for operational and projects which are very minimal. These five projects that we are talking about is funded through what we call the Working for Fisheries Program. It's a specific program which we have started to exactly look at the issue about alternatives. We get from the Department of Public Works through the EPWP program 71 million rand per year. And some of these projects are funded through this. We had made presentations to our executive to increase the funding so that we can provide alternatives for those communities with dependence on fisheries, but who might not able to get an allocation. This partnership, which we also have around aquaculture, is a joint partnership that we have with the Department of Trade and Industry. It is not trade and industry doing something for us. We jointly are working around the implementation of the aquaculture strategy. We are determined to ensure that aquaculture becomes an instrument, as I said before, to work out, to deal with the matters of the over-utilization of the wild caught fisheries. I also want to say that the five farms that we are talking about, it is in Hamburg. It's different from the experiment. I'll come to the experiment now, where farming are taking place with oyster and cod. Kamdubu is with catfish, that is also in the Eastern Cape and close to Graaff-Reinet. In the Free State, we are talking about Springfontein, Koffiefontein, and Lapoy. We are assisting also these farms through accessing markets, sourcing additional funding. We provide technical support to assist these farms that we are talking about. We are convinced that with this approved aquaculture strategy through cabinet, that we could raise additional funding to our own department, but also in collaboration with other departments. The department is clear that we want to elevate aquaculture because that is the alternative that must be there. And all of you have raised, and we take to note the issues that you have raised around us, and we are working on those plans. There was this issue raised about the newspaper article about this matter, which is that court about the West Coast rock lobster. Once again, it's not truthful to explain that we are not contradicting ourselves. What we said in court is that our recovery plan, which we had discussions with WWF, with world-renowned scientists that work with us from the University of Cape Town, that recovery process, for the last 2 decades, the West Coast rock lobster, even longer, have never been higher than 3.5% of pristine. So it's a fallacy to say now it's through our mismanagement of the fish resources that it is now at this level. We know, and for each of these recovery plans, colleagues, honorable members, there are dates that is attached to it, there are specific targets that are attached to it, there are specific management protocols that are guided by them. Our working groups, both scientific and management working groups, are monitoring this recovery process on a monthly basis. So with all of this, we are sure that we can bring West Coast rock lobster, for instance, over the next decade into a resource that is 4.8% of pristine. I don't want to talk about the merits of the court case. It is not only us as a department, the industry as a whole, including the small-scale fishers, including interim relief people, are united around this, in our view, irrational court injunction that is brought by the Green Party. The issue of the amendment bill, let me just maybe also say the issue about poaching. We talk about poaching not only about bringing more resources for arresting people, for criminalizing people, but we understand that it is a combination of development that must take place in those communities. That people must feel that there's they put a stake in this process. That's why the small-scale fishing policy that we've developed over 7 years have institutional arrangements that brings the community part of the decision-making of the resource allocations in communities. We have what we call co-management structures. We have specific steps that is required through that process. Our research and marine resource management team, working with NACT International, have developed a very innovative, which we are still panel beating internally, around how do we see this allocation process taking place. And we are going on a roadshow again after the 14th of June to engage with our communities and our fishing stakeholders around this implementation plan of the small-scale fishery process. So it is an ongoing, the development work that we are talking about, it is not a mechanical process. It is an ongoing iterative process that is get informed by yourselves, by your own wisdom, by the wisdom of our stakeholders around a number of things. I can just inform you, in fact, as we speak now, we have, after the last presentation, we've established a legal reference group, a scientific reference group for the long-term rights allocation process, which is advising the department, and it's very, very well-known scientists, development people from UCT, from Rhodes University, from University of the Western Cape. All of them are now working with us in that reference group to make the small-scale fishery policy a reality. We have this reference group of the legal, and I can mention their names, Mr. Tesmo Papier, Mr. Johan de Waal, and Mr. Maris Diemont, who is assisting us around the amendment bill process, advising the department's independent legal, Professor Nico Olivier. So the amendment bill, our minister has written to the leader of government in parliament. We know about the due date of admitting the bill, and we've asked for a special a special dispensation around the Marine Living Resources Act. And because on the 14th on Friday is the closure of coming period, which we have extended. From there, our legal reference group with the department, we will consolidate those comments, and then we will have the final draft amendment bill and the policies that is accompanying that thing. We hope through the channels of Parliament, we will be able to, at the later stages, I think there are certain bills that will be prioritized for the special dispensation, and maybe this one will be one of them. Honorable Paliso Moswani, abalone appears not in the whole of the coast. It is in South Africa. It appears naturally between Saldanha Bay, up to the Transkei Pondoland area, but it's not appearing abundantly across that coastline. It appears in spots, certain areas, and it is it can be found at 15 meters depth in small areas of the coast. As I said, also abalone is a very slow growing animal. It's not an animal that moves. If it gets onto a rock, it remains there for the rest of its life. So it's not someone that is go to visitors or like ourselves.
Until it
spots. Then it travels from here to China, wherever. Honorable Daly, I'm going to ask Honorable I'm going to ask my colleague Matoba to respond to that question after I finish that issue about Dweza and that issue about the parks board. We have rectified in this presentation. We talked about 30,000 fishers, registered fishers. We have 8,000 registered small-scale fishers on our records. with their names and everything. 7,333 of them are having exemptions now, as we speak, from KZN to Port Norris. In KZN, that particular question about the muscles, there's about 1,400 people that have exemptions to get muscles in that area, and those are the people that are targeted. Because at the moment they've got a singular species. They started to have been part of this small scale fishery process. Because our solution to this challenge of the resource is that you have to reduce, that's why we're talking about communal rights, rights for communities, not only just for individuals in the small scale sector. Please don't misunderstand me when I say for the small scale sector. We're talking about communal rights, where you can bring all of those people or groups of them in a community under one umbrella, but you don't give them one species. You give them a basket of species. And that is what our research team is developing now, to define these fishing areas along the coast, to look at what species comes there, comes where, and what can you put in that basket for people to have economically viable rights. But, Honorable Member Abraham is correct. We must supplement those with a greater acceleration of aquaculture, of fish farming in specific areas where the need is there. We are constrained budgetary to be able to do those things. But we've been assured in the department if we finalize this implementation plan, we look at and we are costing that plan. And we look at how the small-scale fishery policy can be synchronized with the aquaculture development strategy, with DTI, would be possible for, in Treasury, we were informed that we can specially apply for special projects, and we regard this as a special project to do that. Honorable Tebekulu from KZN, you also raised this issue about research or fencing or putting traps into the sea. We are, and we call it rancing. We are doing rancing in, or we've approved rancing programs for abalone in the Eastern Cape. With the abalone, I can also just inform the committee, with the depletion of the stock of abalone, we are looking at alternatives of providing rights holders with alternatives, which includes ranching opportunities, but also we've got a project that will be launched soon around a state-owned hatchery for be able to get access to spat for our current abalone rights holders. The issue, I think I've answered the issue about the limpets, which is the mussels. Honorable Member Abraham, I think I fully agree with him that poaching must be tackled in a more extensive way, so that we can really save our resources. As I said earlier, we also find that it's not only going to be through enforcement, through criminalizing people, but it's through the development process. And this must go hand in hand to deal with the scourge of poaching in our communities. Honorable Van Dalen was also correct when he said people don't want to be do illegal fishing. Ordinary communities, and our experience confirms that if they get better opportunities from us, they themselves would be looking after the resource, and we agree 100% with that, because that is also our experience. The Honorable Member Paliso, I don't know about the abalone farm in Honeklip Bay. We will investigate that. As you said, it's been done by Department of Science and Technology in Stellenbosch University, that we are not able to respond to. We have a honourable member Abram. We have a, as I said earlier, also we have got a dedicated research team who is doing research on aquaculture. They work in the in our broader research department or section. Of course, you know, we have not spoken in the report about the potential of other new fisheries and the potential for certain of the fisheries to grow, because for us to grow those fisheries, horse mackerel is one of those, mass bunker that we call it in common language. For us to be able to grow that fishery, we didn't have enough data and there's not enough research being done because of resource constraint. So that is a potential of a fishery that we can, if we have sufficient resources to do the research, we would be able to either determine this resource might be much bigger than what we precautionary estimates, or we can keep it at the levels that are there. So there are other potential for new fisheries, and if we are able to get the additional or more funding, we would be able to do more research around those things. So in our view, research is there as an instrument to be able to ensure that potential is there to create new opportunities. Sometimes research has been seen as an obstacle to keep people away from the sea. But we have worked with each other. The ethos is around how can research play a role about being the conscious about what research, the resources are, but also to find mechanisms to get more opportunities for fisheries. Chairperson, you wanted to know more about the abalone experiment, and you have been criticizing us regularly about this matter, and you are right, but I just want to clarify maybe, this is not an allocation. This is not a right that has been given, even an exemption. And maybe the way that we have communicated this has been incorrect. The experiment, which is done, a similar experiment is done in the False Bay Coast, around looking in the east of Hanklip, are we able to find, is there a possibility that east of Hanklip you can increase the TAC of abalone now? These two experiments are based in that here in the Western Cape, it's done through the existing rights holders to do the diving, the measurements with our divers. Now in the Eastern Cape, because of the places that are there, and the extreme poverty that exists there, and the fact that there's no real commercial fisheries, we felt that we could broaden that beneficiary base in this experiment. But this experiment could have been done by 10 people. Now we have 1,500 people, because our interest is to also train and transfer skills to people, but even if it's a small amount of benefit, that people benefit from that process. But we hear, so maybe the way that we communicate this is incorrect. That is not an allocation. The experiment is to find... I'm rounding, this is my last, the chairperson was raising it, I'm rounding out the chair. So I just wanted to clarify that is not an allocation. We hope if the research has been done after the 3 years, the information, the data will tell us there is a possibility for a commercial fishery of abalone in the Eastern Cape, or there won't be because of these reasons. And then we will do an allocation to deserving communities. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I've covered all of the issues that was raised.
There was a question if we are going into interim 8 or if those rock lobster quotas will be allocated at the end of the year. But those only lapse in the middle of next year. So are they part of it, or are we going into an interim 8? We need to advise the communities if they need to apply for it again.
Honorable Chairperson, we are meeting with all of the small-scale fishing associations and the representatives very soon, where this matter will be discussed. I don't want to preempt this issue because our intention is to implement the small-scale fishing policy. Our own information, the own pressure that we get from communities, they are sick and tired of these interim relief permits. So we are consulting with them who are direct beneficiaries, but we are also consulting broadly in an intergovernmental forum next week so that we decide what is the best way forward. I cannot give an answer this year, thumbs up answer around this process. There's processes that we want to respect and that we must proceed. I just want to ask the chairperson if Mr. Matoba can just respond to the Dweza issue that was raised by Honourable Member Taylor from Eastern Cape.
Thanks, Chairperson, with your permission.
No, I don't think Mr. Matoba needs to answer about that. I'll give him the details. It doesn't need an answer.
And